Do you have more pictures of your goats than yourself on your phone? Does your vacation time get spent attending goat shows? Can you have a conversation without bringing up dairy goats? Neither can we. So join us as we talk to the country's best breeders, judges, appraisers, and industry experts about all things dairy goats. We are John Kane and Danielle Caroli. Welcome to Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast.
We're the best. What's up, everyone? And welcome to Ringside. I'm John.
I'm joined by Danielle Caroli, the best co-host who's going to lose a pretty awesome bet. What's up?
What's going on, John?
I'm bringing the energy, Danielle.
As always, yes. It is amazing how the second I press record, you just bring it.
Was a little bit jarring.
Just a little, but that's all good.
Okay. It's cold out. It's freezing. It's terrible.
I feel like we have finally arrived in winter. We've been gifted snow 2 days out of the last week. So that's been fun. This morning when I was doing chores, it was probably the second time, maybe third time I've had frozen water buckets in my barn in the morning. And we really haven't gotten much of that this winter. So I feel like winter is officially here. And yes, it is very cold. Everybody is doing well here.
Yeah, it was pretty bitter this morning. It was funny because we're recording in the morning because we're being productive people today. It's like 9 a.m. or 8:50. And I'm like, okay, I got to let the goats out. So, you know, did my chores and I opened the door and the girls are like, what are you doing? And I, you know, open up their stalls to let them go outside and they're looking at me like, dude, it's cold out here. It's early. What are we've got like another hour of sleep. What are you doing, man? But we got everybody out. Everybody's happy. A couple shocked looks by goats, but we're all good.
Yeah, it is funny how they get into their routines and they do not like their sleep disrupted any more than humans do.
They're like, dude, we like to sleep in. What are you doing? They're going to be in for a real shock when babies start hitting the ground in like 2.5 weeks, which we're preparing for today. After I'm done recording, I'm going to be cleaning out one of the stalls in my barn that's got some deep bedding. And then tomorrow, cleaning out the other side and the middle aisle of my barn and getting ready for babies. We're getting excited.
Oh, I spent the morning yesterday doing some organizational things, and I feel like we're pretty ready. The only thing I have to do is reset my barn cameras because they need a little TLC, a little de-barning with a little help of Windex and some dusting. But then also making sure that they are completely covering the pen so that I can see my girls when they are about to go into labor. Because as of today, but when this podcast airs, actually, I will be in that kind of final stretch of my does could kid. Most likely they won't because I have Nubians, but, you know, we're going to be in the thick of it pretty soon here.
Anything else going on this week for you, Danielle?
No, it's like I said, it's just that kind of final prep work to get everything as organized and ready as it can be. So trying to figure out what I've forgotten, work through those things. I'm going to have to get my pasteurizer and canner out to get those all set for it. But it's like the little stuff now, I think, hopefully anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What about you?
I'm mentally preparing for a big event that's going to be happening for Ringside. And that is our episode 200 recording that's coming up. pretty quick. Can't believe that we're like 200 episodes in on this thing. So I'm excited because, you know, it's going to be fun to see who jumps in on that recording. And folks, we're going to be making a post with details and also...
Let's back up a second because you are kind of assuming that everybody is following us and saw the post on socials. For those who just listen to us and are not part of the Ringside social sphere, on February 25th, we are going to be doing a live Zoom call-in, would be the best way to explain it, and talking to our listeners. And all of this will be recorded, and then we will edit it. And by we, I mean John will edit it. It will air the 27th of February in celebration of our 200th episode. So with that, details and the link to join will be on our socials. So even if you are trying to be as anti-social media as possible, it will be on our socials. We can actually probably post it on our website too at dairygoatpodcast.com for anybody who is not on socials with all the details and the link to join.
I'm just so excited. It's going to be fun.
No, it's definitely going to be fun.
But it's also like that fear, kind of like we had for convention when it's like, but what if nobody shows up, right? You're like, you're at your own birthday party and none of your friends come.
Exactly. No, but I think it'll be fun. I'm not too worried about that because I feel like we know how to fill an hour or so talking by ourselves, and we can figure it out as it goes if nobody shows, but I think we will be okay. I'm excited to talk to everybody and kind of have a Zoom party, but caveat on that, as we record our podcast, we are very much enjoying the black screens. You will not see us. We will not see you.
Oh, see, I was do up my beard and everything.
I'm just kidding.
Don't panic.
Oh, I was going to say the pressure. I don't do Zoom, but I hate a Zoom video. That's neither here or there. But anyway,
I mean, if we want people to stick around, though, we might have to. I'm thinking out loud, like thinking this process through as we're recording, like, who has to sit here? I mean, I love looking at your Highland cows as a background. I don't even know what my background is. Is it black?
It's just black today, with your name across the middle.
Which today is Warm Kitty, Soft Kitty. Because yeah. I was watching The Big Bang Theory last night.
Oh, okay. Having a little Sheldon moment.
Yes, exactly.
We are going to iron out the details.
It's quickly, like kidding season, it's quickly approaching. So we need to figure out. We're going to announce on our Facebook, Instagram, a time for the recording. Obviously, reemphasize the date, which is Sunday the 25th, this Sunday coming up. And yeah, we'll have all the stuff. And then we'll probably pre-set up that link on there, too, for the Zoom call.
Yes, we will.
How about some ADGA news? Do we have anything exciting happening in ADGA land?
Well, hold on. I want to just quickly back up because, as you alluded to at the beginning of this podcast episode, we have some other exciting Ringside news, and that is that feedspot.com, which is in all essence a podcast database ranking system, kind of analytical behind the scenes podcast website, which just measures and tracks different things as far as the algorithm goes, the listeners, all of kind of that inside baseball of podcasts, has announced the best four podcasts of 2024. And
best four goat podcasts.
Oh, right. The best four goat podcasts, which I guess, yes. Are there any others really out there worth mentioning?
No, no.
It's only the GOAT podcast. Let's be honest here. No.
Yes.
But we were ranked number one for 2024. And to do that, it's all about our listeners. And we are so appreciative of everyone who tunes in each week, listens to the podcast, shares with their friends the podcast, interacts with us on the socials. There's a lot of work that goes in behind the scenes on our end, but we really could only do it if people are listening. And we are just really excited to receive that ranking and also just grateful for everyone who tunes in each week and listens to John and I and our guests talk about dairy goats.
Yes, and thank you for bringing that up. I should also mention that we have a lot of new listeners lately and a lot of new followers on our socials. So I just wanted to quickly say, hey guys, what's up? Welcome to the Ringside Crew. Yeah, it was pretty cool to open up the email and see that, you know, they're like, oh, you're number one out of four. And it's like, that's cool. These podcasts are awesome. So I'm glad, you know, it's pretty cool to be on top of that list. So moving into some ad good news, you have on here, Danielle, linear appraisal refresher.
Yes. So nothing to report except that the linear appraisal 2024 refresher is taking place today. As John mentioned earlier, it's Sunday when we're recording, but by the time this airs, it will have taken place. It is via Zoom this year, but hopefully will not be via Zoom in the future. But just wanted to let all the listeners know that once again, that linear appraisal refresher where the committee and the appraisers and potential appraisers meet and kind of reset themselves for the 2024 season and is the first start to trying to figure out the LA schedule in terms of where appraisers will be, who's going to be appraising this year, all of those fun things is happening, or at the time we air has happened. And so it's always the kind of start to that season. So exciting things.
Do you not like that it's being offered virtually?
I am going to excuse myself from that comment, but I, as someone on the LA committee, I am going to refrain from offering my opinion to that. Also, as a new person to the LA committee, I feel like I don't have the background to really comment on that, but I welcome your comment.
Okay, well, I personally like that it's being offered virtually to those the committee or to appraisers, I should say, mainly because of the money that has been wasted for years of flying these people out every single year to be for refresher. And I get the point of refresher, and I think it's great, but also every year you still hear everybody saying that these appraisers aren't on the same page, that, you know, there's no consistency and all this crap. So I honestly think that a refresher virtually is great. I think for new appraisers or, you know, possibly trainees, that, yeah, they need to have a few sessions in person. But once people are on the road and they get in the swing of things, like, it's, you're good, in my opinion. So I think that it's smart fiscally to be sending these appraisers to a computer screen instead of California or the East Coast or wherever. So I think it's a good thing. Like, it's smart for the association as far as money goes. That's it. I'm not going to wait for you to rebuttal to that, because you're not going to, which is perfectly understandable. We do have a topic today. As I just jump right in. We have a topic today. Today, with new babies arriving on the ground, we are starting to see those for sale posts. Doe will be registered experimental. Buck Kids progeny will be American. Or even kids or grades. Buck Kids are unable to be registered. We are both fans of experimentals here at Ringside, but we know that there is quite a bit of confusion on how the ADGA herd books work breed by breed. What's the difference between a grade and experimental, and how everything can get registered? For today's episode, we decided to open up our guidebooks and dive into how registering experimentals, grades, and the grading up process, see how it helps us understand the registration process, really.
Exactly. And I think it's one of those things that until you really understand it, mainly because you have to figure it out for your own herd, is something that's very confusing. And there is a lot of misunderstanding about all of that and how it kind of works. And the guidebook, like a lot of times, is a great resource for the things we're going to talk about in this episode. I think before we kind of start off, we probably need to define a few things just so everyone is aware. Like I said, we're pulling a lot of the information directly from our ADGA guidebook. If you're listening to us, understanding it, but need to read it in writing or just even want to have it for a point of reference going forward, all of this information about registering and grading up animals and experimentals, recorded grades, can be found on this on pages 17 through 19 of the 2023 guidebook, which you can view online at any time in that password protected area of the ADGA.org website.
Yeah, actually, I think yesterday I got to the 2023 guidebook by not even having to put in the password.
Oh, it's very possible. You might even be able to just do a quick Google search, 2023 ADGA guidebook. There might be things there somewhere online and kind of like a backdoor to it. But it is there. And if anybody needs the password, feel free to reach out to us. The guidebook is always a handy tool and resource.
Oh, yeah. Listen, when I first started in dairy goats and I would ask, you know, a question to somebody that's had more years than I, they would they'd say, well, what's the guidebook say? And there I go, flipping the pages of the guidebook. So, yeah, it's definitely helpful to read it yourself in the guidebook. And also, you know, not just this, but anything else you might be confused on, it's probably in the guidebook.
Exactly. To start it off, we've been throwing around experimental, recorded grade, these terms. What is the difference, John?
The difference between an experimental and a grade is a grade is a that has a parent that was not registered or registered, you know, native on appearance. Whereas a experimental, you think of it as like an experiment. It's got two registered parents, could be of different breeds, and you know, say like a Nubian and an Oberhausley, and yeah, it's part different registered animal.
I saw something which I really liked in kind of a way to help remember it. Your recorded grade is recorded, not registered. So basically, when you are submitting the application to register a recorded grade animal, that animal is being assigned a number, and yes, she's going to receive a registration paper, but her information is being recorded, not registered. I mean, I don't know if that makes a ton of sense. In my mind, it does. But it's more of acknowledging the animal exists instead of continuing a bloodline for an experimental, or bloodlines for an experimental doe versus a recorded grade.
Oh, yeah, that's perfect. Danielle, we're going to be throwing around the word herd book as well as open and closed herd books. Can you talk about what a herd book is and the difference between an open and closed herd book?
So herd books are basically, in essence, the complete database of the animals being registered within the registry, but it is separated by breed. So there is a Nubian herd book, there is an Oberhausley herd book, there is a La Mancha herd book, and all of these herd books were ultimately started for the breeds that were not originating in the United States. So not necessarily the La Manchas, but the Alpines, the Togs, the Nubians, from the animals that were the original imports into the United States. In those herd books, it's essentially a closed herd book that you are not allowing any new purebreds into that registry. You can add new animals in, but that original purebred herd book is only going to be developed from animals that are direct descendants of that original or the original imports from a different country into the United States. An open herd books allows animals to be bred generation by generation to become a purebred animal.
We might have some Nigerian breeders that are listening and might be confused if you're a newer breeder. Fear not, Nigerian breeder. Your herd book is closed. Okay, there's no grade up process. There's no experimental that has, you know, Nigerian in it. So you're safe. This conversation is interesting, but doesn't pertain to the Nigerian. Let's next talk about the American versus the purebred, or the French for the Alpines. What is the difference, and how do you tell what you have in your herd?
So as I mentioned, that purebred, more or less, except in cases of open herd books, those animals descend from the original import animals directly. That if you were to go way back into the pedigree, you would find the original animals that were imported. And that is all those lines comprise of. An American animal, somewhere in the pedigree, either was graded up, so started with an experimental cross of a 50-50 animal of one breed, one registered breed and another registered breed, or had a recorded grade animal in the pedigree. So you either started with a parentage unknown or a 50% animal with that parentage unknown, different things, and then over time and each subsequent generation has been bred to that particular breed and has the enough animals in its pedigree of that breed conforming to breed standard to have it become an American animal. And for those that don't know, if you're looking at your registration paper, the registration number has that designation of, is it a purebred or is it an American? And it used to be, before NG, that a Nubian, if it was a purebred Nubian, would just be N and then the registration number. Or if it was an American Nubian, it would be AN and then the registration number. With the NG system, they've started putting the P in front of those registration numbers. So your purebred Nubians is PN and your American Nubians are AN. For your Alpines, French and purebred are interchangeable, but it does not say French designation on the papers. I believe the registration number is considered a purebred animal.
Plus, underneath it, it says purebred.
In terms of guidebook language, I think it says purebred Alpine, just simply because of the fact that I don't think they use the word French in the guidebook language, but it is the same thing. The French Alpine is the purebred Alpine.
Okay, fair enough. And which, you know, makes sense. Now, I talked about the Nigerian herd book being closed. Cannot pass through that border, that's for sure. But there are other breeds that have open or maybe possibly closed. We'll talk about that in 2 seconds. So, everything pretty much is an open herd book when you're looking at registering something as, you know, American, right? But as far as purebred, you know, Nubians, purebred Sons, Oberhasli, those are closed. Like, you can't grade up to purebred. The only breeds that you can do that are La Manchas, Sables, and now Guernseys. So you've got all of that. Now, British Guernseys is another story where, you know, really, unless you have, it's a whole thing which we can work through as we tackle this whole thing.
Yes. And so I just want to back up a little bit because I feel like we need to dive into it a little bit more. So Nigerian dwarfs, okay. I know we mentioned it, but I just want to emphasize this again. You can only have, or explain it slightly differently, you can only have purebred Nigerian dwarf animals in the ADGA registry. You will never be able to have a Nigerian and, let's say, a Tog experimental animal and then grade that animal back to a Nigerian if you wanted, or on the other hand, put that animal in subsequent generations into the Tog and Berg herd book. Your Nigerian dwarfs will always be a purebred. You can only have animals who were descended from animals with registration papers when that breed opened, whether it was the AGS system, the Canadian dairy goat system. There's certain ways that these animals started and received,
right,
that ancestry base received the initial entry into the Nigerian dwarf herd book, but you are not going to be able to have anything that isn't registered Nigerian for the Nigerian dwarf. The other herd books, you cannot create any new purebreds from animals that are not descended directly of purebred animals. For the Nubian, the only way to create a purebred Nubian is to breed a purebred to a purebred. Alpine, again, only way to breed a purebred alpine, purebred alpine to purebred alpine. When you breed an animal to an American animal, so if you were to breed a purebred Nubian and an American Nubian, those kids become American Nubians. You cannot go up to a purebred Nubian. That being said, there is a subsequent population, and these are basically the American breeds of La Mancha, Sable, and Guernsey that you can breed up to purebred.
For Guernseys, because I know I just touched on it real quick, for Guernseys, the golden Guernseys are the Guernseys that were imported. As far as the embryos go, you know, the only golden Guernseys you're going to see are from those like original animals, which there's a few kicking around, but you're not going to run into many of them. So for the most part, what you're going to be seeing is purebred or American Guernseys.
Yes. And the thing about it is, just so everyone's aware, if both parents are British Guernseys registered with the British Goat Society, the offspring will be purebred Guernseys if the application is accompanied by a statement signed by an ADGA member who is not a member of the applicant's family, that the animal being registered conforms to the Guernsey breed type, as do five generations in its ancestry too. Those British Guernseys on paper, for basically the process of simplicity, are considered part of that purebred Guernsey population.
Let's touch on the herd books, because there's always the confusion. What happens if you breed two Sons and get a Sable, and can a sable offspring, you know, be Sonnens?
The answer currently, and I believe the International Sable Breeders Association has just submitted a letter to the breed committee for ADGA. So things can change, and historically, sable registration has changed in the past too. If you have a Sonnen that is from if you breed a Sonnen to a Sonnen and that Sonnen has color, you as the breeder can decide if it's going to be registered as a Sonnen or an experimental animal. That, so a Sonnen to Sonnen that has color, registered Sonnen to Sonnen that has color, can enter the sable herd book. You can also choose that it can go into experimental as an animal that does not conform to the breed standards. But other than that, The only way you can create more sables are sable to sable breeding. If you are to breed a sable to a Saanen and that animal has color, that animal is an experimental that would conform to the sable breed standards. If the sable and the Saanen produce a white kid, which I don't even think is really that feasible, but maybe it is. I'm not, maybe there's a possibility. I'm not well versed in the sable to Saanen. Like, is it 50% where it is all in the color genes? But with that, that animal again is an experimental that conforms to the Saanen breed standard.
I think the next thing that we're going to tackle here is when registering an experimental or grade kid, what are some things that we need to keep in mind when registering them? What does checking that box conforms to breed standard mean in the experimental and grade registration process? And I guess I'll start here. Conforms to breed standard, obviously, whatever breed this animal is leaning towards. So say, will use my 50% over Hosley, 50% Guernsey kid. Okay. When I checked, the box conforms to, it was Guernsey because she conforms to Guernsey. So she's all gold. She doesn't have crazy white. She doesn't have black points or anything like that. When you're registering animals that are experimental or grade, you really need to make sure that these animals do meet the guidelines of whatever breed you're registering them as. And if that means that you have to go to your guidebook and read the breed standards for that breed, by all means do so.
I think a really easy example for everyone to see is my doe, Dottie. Surprise, surprise, Dottie has a black spot on her. So she is a 75% Saanen with 25% Nubian, but she has a black dot that is larger than 1.5 inches. So therefore, that is not something that conforms to breed standard. So when I was registering her, I registered her as do not conform or does not conform. She had a twin sister who was completely white. She had the correct ear set, the correct face structure. That animal I was able to check conforms to breed standard. So it's something that's really important when you are dealing with experimentals and grade animals, because it matters for the subsequent generations track and how fast they can get to either to that American status, how many generations they need, or in the terms of La Manchas, Guernseys, and Sables, how fast they can actually go up to purebred status.
Perfect example of the other side of that coin is when I bought Jem, my aged doe. She, her registration was does not meet breed standards, you know, conform to breed standards. And when you looked at it, as far as color description, it mentioned a white spot on her head. Well, when she was a kid, she had white that, as a kid, looked like a decent-sized white spot. But as she grew, that white didn't. And when you shaved it, it could be covered by a dime, right? So I went through the herd book committee. You know, I had to submit a form and pictures and to show that, you know, this white spot is, you know, smaller than, I think it has to be like a half an inch circumference or maybe an inch circumference, whatever it is. It's not like I don't have my guidebook open right in front of me. But regardless, it met breed standards. So now she's first generation conforming instead of, you know, her daughters being first generation conforming when bred to Ober Hosley. So she's first generation. Her daughters are now second. Granddaughters are third, aka American Ober Hosley.
Right. So let's dive into it really quick. I think this is the perfect transition into this. So often we use the word grade up. How does that process work? Let's kind of lay it out a little bit.
For Oberhasli and most grade ups with, you know, breeding up to American, or in fact all, it's for does to go from experimental to American, it's three generations conforming. Grand Dam conforms to whatever, say Oberhasli. Dam conforms to Oberhasli. And then the daughter, the one that's registering, conforms to Oberhasli. She's American. Okay. And then for bucks, it's four generations. So that doe that just got, that just became American, her son could be American. Or even say you're working with experimentals, that fourth generation of conforming to whatever breed standard, that's going to be your American buck.
Exactly. So you need those three generations, and making that animal on pedigree be 7/8 of the breed to put them as American status.
Right. Pretty easy. It can be confusing, you know, especially if I didn't know the buyer, like, or the breeder like I did, you know, with Jem, I would have never really had known that, you know, her dam didn't conform to breed standards. So I could have easily been like, oh, well, this one's, you know, second generation conforming, you know, but.
No, it definitely is a conversation that you want to be to have when you are working with breeders and buying and an experimental animal or an animal with grade papers, that where they fall in the line of it all. The other thing I want to touch on in terms of this grading up is what happens when we have purebred or we have these open herd books. So the La Manchas, the Sables, and the Guernseys. What happens is if your animal has three generations of American, La Mancha, Sable, or Guernsey, then behind them, then they will enter the purebred herd book. For example, like a Sable with three generations of American Sable ancestry, or one parent with three generations of American Sable ancestry and one parent of purebred Sable will be entered into the purebred Sable herd book. So an exception to this rule are kids, as we mentioned, that meet the Sable breed standard, but are born of purebred Saanen parents. And again, those kids can either be purebred Sables or experimentals. And the same is true with the La Manchas and the Guernseys. So three generations of American produces a purebred.
Can I get in a little bit of a soapbox since we're talking about, you know, experimentals and stuff real quick?
Sure.
So, you know, we're talking about registering and, you know, checking the box conforms to breed standard. When you're registering, and this can even be for people that don't breed experimentals or don't have grades or, you know, whatever. I seem to remember back in 2016 when people were not happy with a certain coloration of a national champion. But then often you'll see those same people scared to check does not conform to breed standards when they are in fact registering animals that might not fit breed standard. You know, might be too light of an animal, or might have too big of a spot, or, you know, something along those lines. People, when you're registering your dairy goats, you should be registering them to as they are. You know, you cannot say, well, when you clip them, it's not as light. Like, no, as they are, do they meet breed standard? And you really need to stick to that, because you are, in fact, affecting the breed. It might not be on a national level, but at a local level, you can definitely be affecting the breed. And I've seen judges that are like, wow, this is an American Oberhasli, or this is an Oberhasli, because they look at them and they're way too light. And guess what? They get bumped down the line anyway. So why not register it as an experimental, does not conform to breed standard, and have fun in the recorded grade classes at shows?
It's a really interesting one for me. And I think it is a scary topic to broach and consider, because in some ways, the coat also is affected. I mean, you've been on this podcast multiple times griping about your does and having to clip them differently because of the way the Oberhausli hair is kind of comes in and fills. And I think it was it, I think Kurt mentioned that if you were to put the Oberhausli hair under a microscope, it kind of comes in rings of color.
Yeah.
And so with that, you have the nature of their hair and how it comes in. But then you also, we all know that nutrition plays a big aspect in that coloring as well. And so it is a fine line between are they conforming to breed standard or is there a nutritional issue that needs to be addressed? Obviously, you want these animals to meet breed standards. And if they aren't meeting breed standards, you do not want them in the herd book. But I do think it's one of those things that there is a bit, there is a variation. I mean, we'll pick on the Oberhausli just because we started talking about them, but there is a variation in that color, even in terms of what a breed specific standard is in color. That's not to say that those animals, if they enter the ring, can't be faulted for it. I mean, in the scorecard, part of the scorecard is breed character, and that does take a weight. It's the same mm-hmm. with my Nubians. I remember I had a doe who she had pendulous ears, but she had ear control. That is not necessarily the best in terms of those Nubian breed characteristics. So there was a time where she was going up against another. She was in the lineup for champion, and she was going up against another doe. They were similar in some ways. Each had trade-offs. But of course, the Nubian in the ring, her ears were, they were moving. And she was looking one way, and the ears, kind of like a dog, were moving as she was looking. And the judge commented, and rightly so, that part of what put her as the reserve champion that day was that the doe that he selected as grand champion had less ear control and was more correct into that breed standard. Sometimes it's the structure of the face. Is there a Roman nose on a Nubian? Is it more of a straight nose in terms of different things like that too? So it is definitely breeder integrity to make sure the animals, if you're registering them correctly, are registered. I know that sometimes people who have sables and sonnens will actually wait to register animals because historically they know that an all-white doe with a darker nose is going to potentially come into color after her yearling hair, like after she's a yearling and her hair kind of changes coats. That it's just things like that, that there's a hint that there could be color there, and they want to make sure that she is entered into the correct herd book. And so it's once again kind of being the example and making sure when you are registering them, you are registering them correctly.
I just think it's a huge integrity thing, like you're saying. And honestly, if you're going to complain about certain things with your breed, you better not be registering things that are way more egregious. Just saying.
Well, yeah.
Okay. Well, we need to talk about recorded grades now because, you know, though this is where people get confused, is when you stop the experimental talk and you start talking about recorded grades. So how are recorded grades created?
I guess the easiest way to say they are created is, in essence, they're just pulled out of thin air. Like,
yes, I was going to say the same thing.
all of a sudden you decide a recorded grade exists, at least that initial recorded grade. It is an animal that you don't know who the mother is, or maybe you don't know who the father is. And by not knowing who the mother is, maybe she's not she's not a registered animal, but on her pedigree, there's no dam listed on that pedigree, but you know who her sire is. That animal then you start to create more or less a paper trail for those animals. You start to record them, and then they can eventually be graded up to an actual registered animal in one of the herd books. The other way that you can do that is you can get an animal who is an NOA. So NOA is native on appearance. There used to be native on production as well. And animals that while on milk test and produced enough milk to qualify for production levels were allowed to be native on production, but they've since eliminated that. And so the only way an animal can just kind of like, here she is if they are initially a native on appearance animal. And with a native on appearance animal, what you do is, let's say you went to a sale barn and a Nubian doe caught your eye, and you as the ethical breeder checked and made sure there was no tattoos in her ear and said, okay, she has not been in the herd book before, in the ADGA registered herd book. From what I can tell, there's no tattoos identifying her. I don't know where she came from. She looks Nubian, and she looks Nubian with no potential boar in her, no potential Nigerian in her, or no potential any other breed except the ADGA registered standard breeds. I am going to get another breeder to evaluate this animal and fill out a form that says, yes, she conforms to the Nubian breed standard. So then I would submit my application and she would become a grade Nubian. Then the next generation, if I bred her to either, it doesn't matter, an American or purebred Nubian buck, her kids would be 50% recorded grade Nubian. So in essence, it's this the native on appearance animal. The only reason you would really want to register her is if you wanted to track her yourself. Maybe you wanted to show her, appraise her, have milk production records on her related to the pedigree. But in essence, she is a zero. And then that next generation would be 50%, which is the same as if it was an unknown dam that you bred to a purebred buck. That kid is 50%, and then the next generation is 75%. And they're on and therefore. But yeah, so experimentals, you can trace. You can go back. It's not pure. It's not one breed or another, or sometimes it's just an animal that does not conform to breed standards, so then gets dropped to experimental. But you can look at that pedigree and you can go back generations and generations and generations. Recorded grade, you're seeing gaps on the pedigree. Now on the flip side, you can register experimental bucks.
Right.
There are certain breeds that use them as assets to their herds, particularly in examples where that next generation is American. I find that a lot of people are more willing to buy an experimental buck in that regard because his offspring will be registered as American regardless of what he's been bred to, unless it is an experimental doe, and then the math gets dicey. But with that, people are willing to use experimental bucks. And I think back to the days of before sables were registered, and there were some pretty nice, quote unquote, experimental bucks because they were being used for that sable herd that was, or like the quote unquote sable herd book that at the time hadn't been developed and recognized by ADGA. But all of those animals were coming from registered animals. Originally, there was a Sonnen in the background that produced a kid that was color. That animal went into the experimental herd book. And how do you create a population of sables? You register your experimental bucks as well.
Yeah. And there's even, I mean, there's people in every breed that have experimental buck that he's last generation experimental, so they don't care that they don't get to show him, but daughters will be American, so that's all that, you know, people care about. They want American daughters, and you know, if they do good enough things for the herd, who cares if there's, you know, experimental written on there?
No, exactly. If there's a reason to register him and there is a value to him based on his pedigree, what he's bringing to the table, maybe that is an option for your herd. But I think it ultimately is the same as when you're bringing in just a normal American or purebred buck. There has to be a reason, but it's the same thing, that it's just a slightly different paper.
And like I said, you know, experimental bucks, you can't show them at buck shows. So just be aware of that, people.
Yes, no, that is true. You can show experimental and recorded grade animals. The does get shown in the recorded grade class. There is no specific experimental class. If they have brown papers, which is what you receive if you have experimentals or grades, the does get shown in that recorded grade class, and they are judged the same. The only thing you should know is whether or not that animal is an experimental or is a recorded grade, especially if you're handling for somebody else. In the guidebook, it says when you are evaluating recorded grade animals, you can only fault a defect so much when it is an experimental. So,
well, yeah, you're right.
With recorded grades, in the guidebook, it says a doe for which the recordation certificate specifies a breed-specific type should be faulted only when the breed character defects would be regarded as a disqualification. The amount of this fault to be applied to a recorded grade should be as if it were a very serious defect. However, if it is an experimental animal, because in essence that animal is called experimental because she does not conform, she should not be disqualified or faulted for that. It is only the recorded grade. So if you tell me, if we're in a show and she is a recorded grade Nubian and she has airplane ears, that is going to count against her. If you tell me she is an experimental 50% Nubian, 50% Sonnen, the ears are not going to count against her.
Well, I'm not going to call out any names, Danielle, but there are some judges out there that need to read that in the guidebook because they're not following suit.
No, and I think I've had a few, I mean, some judges won't even ask in that recorded grade class. But I know, again, my doe Dottie, I remember a show where I walked her out in the ring and I could see the panic in the judge's eye because he saw her black dot. He came to check her teats and I was like, don't worry, she's an experimental. And that just kind of that relief of like, okay, I don't have to worry about it is something to consider.
First of all, showing in the recorded grade breed class is super fun just because it's so competitive and it's, you see all types of does and it's just always a time. But I also like with showing those animals, the judges coming up, and sometimes you get judges that try to guess what breeds they're like mixed with, or you know, sometimes judges just, you know, are happy to hear what breeds, you know, they'll say, well, okay, well, what is she? And you tell them, oh, Nubian and Oberhasli, and you get, really? I can't see Nubian at all. Or they'll pat the nose and they'll be like, oh, I see the Roman nose here. And it's like, yep. So it's just always fun to show in recorded grades.
No, and I love a good recorded grade class because I feel that for people who only have a few recorded grades, kind of like that token recorded grade, that animal has to be absolutely fabulous because it's competing with the other animals in the barn. And market value of that animal is probably going to be slightly less. So when push comes to shove and you have all these mouths to feed and you need to cull some animals, I feel that sometimes, unless that recording grade is absolutely amazing, she's going to be the first to go. And so then when you have all of these gorgeous recorded grades who have held their own in herds over the other animals, it's just these fabulous, strong, amazing animals that are competing. So it definitely is a fun class to watch when you have some fabulous recorded grade animals entering the ring.
I will say it's a little frustrating sometimes to be showing my Guernsey type experimental, because judges that haven't judged Guernseys yet kind of don't understand that they're a very small goat. So they're like, oh, this one is great with this, this, and this, but she's also small. It's like, yeah, well, she's small because she's Guernsey. But I still have fun showing her. It's a good time. Danielle, this is one thing that I have experience with, but can you change the animal's herd book after they are registered?
The easiest answer is yes, but you have to go through a process to do it. People who normally do this, I feel like the biggest, most common way that it happens is that Sonnen, who goes darker several years after she, or several months after she is registered, a breeder registers her right when she's born, and 3 months later finds out that she's going silver. And so then they want to put her into that sable herd book instead, or change her to experimental. But you, I mean, if you want to speak on it again a little bit, you've had experience directly from changing herd books.
Jem, like I was saying earlier, you know, her spot was within breed standards. So I went to the herd book committee, filled out the form, sent in also pictures of the does, you know, the spot in question. You know, they review it as a committee. If they agree that she does meet breed standard, like in this instance, you know, then they change her registration. They ask you to send in her registration and they'll mail you out a new one that's stating, you know, otherwise, and you're good to go. I will say that when you're changing herd books for, like, say, I think she was six at the time, it does have a little bit of a snowball effect. All of a sudden, animals that were experimental become American. So you have to be pretty thoughtful in your decision making. You know, if Jem had, you know, a great granddaughter that was a Finnish champion, I probably wouldn't have, you know, as an and she's registered experimental, I probably would not have changed Jem's herd book, or, you know, changed the description of meeting breed standards, because that doe that was a finished experimental will lose those legs and have to reshow as an American Oberhasli.
Right.
It's something that you really have to think about if you decide that you want to change a herd book for, you know, something that all of a sudden you're like, wait, this does meet within, she really is a Sonnen and not a sable. She, you know, this cream color that, or this dark color that went down her back disappeared as she got older, or say, you know, as a doe age, you're like, well, she really does meet breed standard. You know, it can affect offspring, it can affect progeny down the line, so it's something you really, really need to think about.
Yeah, and the other thing to say about Sonnens and sables, and this is partially why, and I might have misspoke earlier even about it, but in the rules for changing herd books, it says once an animal is registered as either sable or Sonnen, it may only change herd books into the experimental register. An animal will not be allowed to change from the experimental register to either the sable or Sonnen herd book. So,
oh,
yes. And so that's partially probably why people wait to register them, because they want to make sure they're registered correctly.
Yeah. No, makes a lot of sense. That's wild. So yeah, have fun with that, sable Sonnen people.
Do we have any real life examples to kind of talk about to just explain this with actual goats on the ground? And so I'll jump on this. I know I mentioned my doe, Dottie, and I'll kind of back up to her dam first. Dottie's dam, it is a Snubian, or affectionately called a Snubian. She was 50% Saanen, 50% Nubian. This doe was cream colored, but she had airplane ears like no other. With that 50-50%, she was registered experimental, but she did not conform to breed standards. I bred her to a Saanen, got Dottie and her sister, who, as I said, Dottie has the correct ears to be registered Saanen. She is the correct color, except for that black spot, which is large enough that she, when she was born and when she was registered and now, that black spot makes her not conform to breed standards. Her sister was all white, correct ear set, correct face. She did conform to breed standard. Dottie is still in my herd now this year, as we kind of talked about. She was the doe that I initially bred her Saanen, but she didn't take, and I bred her to a Nubian this year. Those kids, I was thinking about it the other day, and there is a possibility, based on the buck I bred them to, or bred her to, that they could come out with the correct face, the correct Roman nose, and ears that maybe they're not the prettiest ear, but they are long enough, and they do not have the ear control. I mean, it's very possible that they'll be just like out for takeoff and a crazy wingspan, but because she has the 25% Nubian and these kids would be like 60-something percent Nubian, there is a possibility that the ears will be the correct breed set to conform to Nubian breed standards, and that nose will be Roman enough to conform to breed standards. So those kids could be, I could choose, if they look the part, first generation conforming to breed standards for a Nubian. They could also very easily be like animals you just want to put a bag over their head and like, you know, cry when you see them because they're just these like derpy looking children. I won't know until they're born. But in that case, that animal, if there's a doe kid and she looks close enough to Nubian that I am comfortable saying she conforms to breed standards, that could be my first generation Nubian. On the other hand, could not happen, and those kids would still be registered. They would just not conform to breed standards, and then the next year I would breed it to whatever and again figure out, are we looking at the breeds that they are supposed to represent when I check that box?
Yes, yes, yes. Make sure you read the breed standard, folks. It's important. Yeah, I think that's a good way to wrap that up, Danielle. Just remember, folks, experimental, it's like an experiment. You're a crazy scientist. Grades, you know, they made the grade to meet the breed, but there's nothing to go back on. Well, Danielle, if people wanted to find more about our 200th episode or anything else about Ringside, where can they go?
You can find us at DairyGoatPodcast.com. We are on Facebook. Search us at Ringside, an American Dairy Goat Podcast. We are on Instagram and TikTok at Ringside Podcast. And as always, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. While you're there, be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating and a review. We appreciate it.
Yeah, and just remember, folks, we're the best around. Everybody, this has been Ringside, an American Dairy Goat Podcast. I'm John.
And I'm Danielle.
And we may be the best around. We'll catch you on the next one. Ringside, an American Dairy Goat Podcast, is not an affiliate of the American Dairy Goat Association. All opinions or information regarding the ADGA does not represent the registry.